Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Good. We'd like to talk about Syria. It's still in the news. And from my viewpoint, it's not getting any better. Looks like we've stirred up some more trouble over there. Troops are going in. And of course, there was an argument, or at least a lot of conversation about how we were going to manage foreign policy in the new administration. And there was nobody arguing, well, we need boots on the ground, boots on the ground. But it looks like, what are we doing? We're putting boots on the ground. And we've been trying to sort out and give the benefit of the doubt to Trump when he says or does something good. And we thought he was on the right track with Russia, but that's a different story now. Hopefully we can discuss that in depth next week about where the appointments are going. But there's definitely a change here. There is escalation because we have not literally admitted we had any troops on the ground in Syria, special forces, probably CIA, they're every place. But now it's outward, the policies have changed, and we're putting maybe ready to get 1,000 troops on the ground in there, Marines as well as Army officers. I've heard some short interviews on television, the neocon supporters, they're very excited about this. The policy has changed. Well, the policy of intervention has continued to be the same, but there is a little bit of change in strategy. But in some ways, if you want to give troops some benefit of the doubt, he's being consistent on this because he has said, you know, on the one hand, we treat Russia differently. You know, on the other hand, we are going to get ISIS. We are going to go every place and any place. And I think he's proven the point. So this neocon that was talking was very excited about this. Boy, we're going to get them. We're going to go in there. And the policy will be, we're going to go in there and wipe them out and then get out and we won't be in nation building. But to tell you the truth, it's intervention, and intervention is intervention, and I'm afraid that not much good is going to come by us escalating by sending ground troops into Syria.
Well, you know, there's a lot of inter-service rivalry all the time, but this is equal opportunity because all four branches are involved. We've got the naval vessels off the coast. They've sent in the Marines to go to Raqqa. We've got the Air Force bombing, and today we found out that some 23 civilians were killed by U.S. coalition strikes north of Raqqa. And now you've got the Army involved, and they've gone into to Manbij to keep a couple of different groups of U.S.-backed rebels from killing each other. So everyone's involved, everyone's in the pool, and somehow the Trump administration thinks that this will work out.
It sounds to me like we have to rush in and do something differently before peace breaks out. You know, ISIS has been on a little bit on the run there, yeah. And stability with a government, whether it's the greatest government or not, is a government or not. That's sort of another question, another subject to talk about. But we're moving in there. When ISIS is shrinking, it looks like maybe ISIS would be run from Raqqa. But now with us being involved, it asks questions. You know, the Kurds are involved and the Turks are involved, and they may be having their own little skirmish on who gets to control what's left of the area. And yet they're both our allies. So you talk about mixing things up. But the significant event here is we are expanding it. It's escalation. It's troops on the ground. Accidents are going to happen. And these planes and bombs, you mentioned already that there have been civilian killed. And I'll tell you, if you were a civilian in that country or any of these countries, whether our policies change that much, you know, if you hear of civilians being killed and your family being killed and the bombs dropping out of the sky, I don't think the average person is going to notice a whole lot of difference. But they're not going to be reassured. Say, oh, they're just going to drop bombs for the day and they're going to kill all the bad people and they're going to leave and we're going to have a wonderful country again. I mean, they're totally absurd. And that's what they're working on.
Were they sleeping through Libya? You know, were they sleeping through Iraq? This is exactly what happened there. But, you know, it's, I think there are two things that are happening. They're both very interesting. The Raqqa one is interesting because, as you pointed out, the Syrian army with the Russian allies have made some really significant gains over this past week. In the Aleppo district, they've wiped out a lot of ISIS, and now they're preparing to move eastward toward Raqqa. And it's a significant move. And actually, I think we have a map, and we can put that up when we have it. It demonstrates the gains recently. And I found this on Twitter, but I think it the red now is the Syrian army and how it has consolidated up almost to Manbij, and the yellow is the Turkish-backed troops. And now since it's consolidated that area and it's cut off the Kurds, it's moving down toward Raqqa. And this is a very significant move. But the U.S. involvement now, according to Defense One, which is a military website that's very good, the U.S. wants to take Raqqa before the Syrians can get there because they want to make sure that they hand it over to Syrian rebels, who they claim are moderates. But we know from Tulsi Gabbard that there are no moderate
no moderates
rebels
there. So, yes, the war has changed a bit, and the government looks like it's going to be there a while, but there's still the big fight on who's going to divvy up the land and who's going to have the control. And it's more than just one Syrian faction against another, which would have been a civil war and something that happens all the time. But this is an uncivil war in that it invites so many different countries involved. But even the overall policy, you know, Obama had a policy and he wanted to be a diplomat, and he had a coalition of individual countries that were dedicated to be fighting ISIS. And I understand the new administration didn't particularly want to be working in big coalitions and having NATO tell us what to do because they don't pay their bills. But evidently he's going to support this idea that we have this coalition of these many countries being involved. And maybe then they'll, when the dust settles, they'll sit around and have a peace treaty and come up with a Versailles Treaty or something.
That'll work. You know, the Washington Post reported today, I think it was, that Trump is keeping Obama's strategy of this 60-country coalition, which gives the impression that everyone is united. They're going to have a big meeting later this month of all of the representatives of these countries. The Washington Post says a signal that Trump wants to continue Obama's diplomatic effort from 2014, despite candidate Trump attacking this as a stupid and horrible strategy. They did make one big, they kept the person in charge, who Obama had, they kept him in charge. It did make one big change. Now it's not an anti-ISIL group, it's anti-ISIS. So they changed the name.
Oh, okay, that is good. Now, Eastern Syria, who ends up with that, has the advantage, of course, with the oil.
Yes.
And that's probably a big deal, and that may even interest Trump.
That's right.
So he might be checking on who gets the oil, because it will cost us some money to go in there. And, of course, we have unlimited supply of money out of a computer, and as long as the people take our money, we can manage our empire. But oil has always been important, you know, from the very first Persian Gulf War, when we had to save Saudi Arabia from Saddam Hussein.
Yeah.
You know, it was all about oil, and it's been about oil for a long time, but it's still about oil, and this has been something on the settlement, the northern part of Iraq, and the arguments with the Kurds. It has a lot to do with oil, natural resources, and that, of course, has been historic. People fight over these things, and this is about the messiest thing that I think I remember. The enemies used to be aligned. You know, you didn't have difficulty figuring out which government and which army was on the side of the Allies in World War II. You generally knew who was on which side. But if you went into Syria today and tried to figure it out, if they had to do hand-to-hand combat, nobody would know who to kill. But when you're up in the sky, you don't care. You just drop bombs on people and destroy something and teach them all a lesson, and then get out, This is the way they go.
Well, yeah, Eastern Syria is where the oil is. I think that is a big concern. It's pretty sparsely populated desert, so there's not a lot of infrastructure that's worth, cities that are worth. But the other thing I think that's significant, and I think if the U.S. makes it to Raqqa first and controls Raqqa, it's going to carve off a big slice of Syria. It's not going to give that back to Assad. That's not going to happen. It's going to give it to these U.S.-backed moderate rebels, and they'll hold that. Because I think the U.S. hasn't given up, and certainly the neocons haven't given up on their ultimate goal of regime change. That's what the Israelis want. That's what the Saudis want. That's what the Gulf states want. That's what the U.S. still wants. And this will provide them a staging area to continue that at a later date.
And And right now, you know, the position that Obama took, Assad has to go, 2011, I believe. And then that escalated seriously the whole mess. Now it's over Raqqa and the eastern part there. And who gets it makes important. Like you say, they may use this as a base to further antagonize, Assad. But that's not immediate on their agenda. The immediate agenda, the debate is, who controls Raqqa and who controls the East and who's going to be in charge, and how are the Kurds and the Turks, both our allies, going to figure out how they're going to share on this loot? And I think there's lots of ifs in there. And we haven't even really talked about the significance of Russia being in this. They've been involved for a long time, and they've been close allies of Assad. So they might be just sitting back and twiddling their thumbs and figuring, things look like they're going their way anyway, so why should they be involved?
And they probably were encouraged when candidate Trump said, hey, the Russians are killing ISIS, why should we get involved? Let them do it.
You know? Yeah.
But, you know, another piece of the, this is almost like a bowl of spaghetti, you know, the U.S. policy there, and we haven't talked about it yet, is the situation in Manbij, where you have the U.S.-backed Syrian Democratic Forces, which is mostly Kurdish YDP forces, and they've been getting in scuffles with the Turkish-backed forces. And you know, obviously, Turkey is a NATO ally. So the U.S. has had to send in a bunch of Army Rangers into Manbij to try to keep these two allies of ours from killing each other. But what happened in the meantime is, without telling the Americans, the YPG, the Kurds, made a deal with the Russians and the Syrians to hand over a group of villages to Syrian government control in exchange for protection against the Turks. So we are jumping in the middle of this absolute chaos.
You'd wonder where they're coming from, what they're doing. Maybe some people argue, there are some people who just want chaos and pick up the pieces, and that would explain everything, because that's what they get no matter what their motivations are. But, you know, once again, there's more stories than ever about increasing the money in the military expenditures. That's been on the board all along, and Trump hasn't hidden his thoughts on that. But today I was hearing a report that a significant part of the Air Force, it was a, immediate strike force that they needed, and they were at half personnel that they needed to make some of these attacks. It's an attack group. And I thought, well, and it's just, it was another argument to scare the people. Well, there's so many dangers in the world. You mean we're only going to have half as many people in this very important offensive group that we have there? So it's, once again, it's build up more money, and they've already got that in the pipeline. But all this needs to do is get out of hand, the budget has nothing to do with what ends up at the end of the year. Any emergency, whether it's economic or military, spend, and they've been able to do that. And that's why I see the only limitation on this. We're not just, you cannot bet on common sense coming to people in Washington, no matter how much you're hopeful. There are people there with common sense, but they're not going to get an ear. And when you see all the major networks that are pro-war and neocon and anti-Russia, Why should you expect anything? So I think this is going to continue. I can't see how it's going to be restrained in any manner until it's a financial limitation. You know, financial limitation is what the Soviets brought down the Soviets, and it will happen to us. But in the meantime, I guess this is going to go on. They mess up in Libya. They mess up in Iraq. They mess up in Afghanistan. They fight not 2 or 3 years, 5, 10, 15 years. Now we're starting to count them by decades. And it doesn't stop because they have unlimited funds. And people aren't going to, the attitude won't change in Washington. Just look at the tragedy of the 1960s. And that was really tragic. But finally, the demonstrations, the people woke up and said, well, enough is enough. And yet the campuses, whether it's their concern about what the CIA is doing now or about this war going on, they're oblivious to it, yeah. Except for a smaller group that I visit with, yeah. And Young Americans for Liberty. That's a different group. But overall, what the administrations on campuses control and kick out people that would have a different opinion, they're not allowed on campuses. So we're not anywhere close to having the noise that is necessary coming from the people to say enough of this nonsense on foreign policy. It hasn't really come back to reality. They're still worrying about political correctness in bathrooms and all these other things and white supremacy and guilt-ridden people and who's going to apologize to whom. And, you know, that's what's happening on the campuses. But this will become a big event. But I think, unfortunately, a lot more people are going to suffer. Not only people who are on the receiving end of our bombs, the civilians that die, and when Americans die, it affects a lot of other people. But in the meantime, the spending and the debt and the spending and all the economic problems, that affects all Americans, and that'll probably get a lot worse, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we just touched on a couple of things, but, you know, there's also talk, maybe we mentioned, of sending 1,000 troops into Kuwait as a reserve force in case things escalate, which, of course, they will.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't going to work. And it's unfortunate to see people who criticized Obama's policy now cheering Trump's policy, which is essentially Obama's policy on steroids.
That's right. They're doing it. And it's all one policy because our government, for maybe 100 years, has accepted the position of interventionism. Getting involved when you don't need to be, it certainly has been many more mistakes of intervention since World War II, you know, because it's been us alone that's been involved, and we didn't have a Hitler or a Stalin to be able to fight against. But no, it's going to continue, but the policy is the same. The policy is the same whether it's Republicans or Democrats. It's so discouraging to look for the information. The only place you're going to get the information is going to be probably on the internet and certain individuals you trust that you can read. But the unfortunate part about it is the propaganda, the war propagandas are very, very powerful. When the politicians get together and talk, that is why this bipartisanship is so disastrous. What do you mean bipartisanship? Well, it's bipartisan to support these wars. This is one thing. It's the bipartisanship right now that I fear in this country right now is the bipartisanship of the neoconservatives along with the Democrats. The Democrats want to just do anything they can to hurt Trump for political reasons, and the neocons have a strategy, and I was hoping the neocons would be on the defensive with Trump, but right now, and we will continue to talk about this, the neocons, unfortunately, have a fair amount of influence in the administration. So these are a few things that we have to deal with, but still, on the optimistic side, when I talk to a lot of people outside of Washington, a lot of young people, believe it or not, they understand this, they don't like it, and there's a growing number of people. The spirit of liberty is alive and well. It's just that, unfortunately, in the media, you don't hear about it, and you certainly don't hear about it coming from our government. But the people will eventually change things, but we do need a lot more support and understanding what it would be like if we had a government dedicated to the protection of liberty rather than intervening constantly in people's lives, intervening constantly in the economy, and intervening constantly in the internal affairs of other nations. If we accepted those rules, believe me, I'm convinced that we would have a much better chance of achieving peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.